All right, very good. 687-8005. We're trying to do something a little bit different today here on Paying Attention. Doing a little tribute to the veterans, and I will be taking phone calls. I'm interested in hearing from veterans or family members of veterans today. And what I'm particularly interested in is hearing what you think about the impending war in Iraq, whether or not some of the dissent that we're hearing about what our American policy is in the Saudi Arabian region, in the Iraqi region, whether or not that is, somewhat similar to the anti-American protests that we got from those wacko hippies during the Vietnam War. And whether or not there are always going to be people who will take the other side when America is at war. And I know that those leftists out in the community who were who like to protest war and like to protest America and everything's always our fault. Anytime something happens, we always deserved it. I'm interested in what you think. Is the dissent in America right now over the Iraqi war or the impending Iraqi war? It's not going to be much of a war. We're going to sneeze and they're going to be gone. But the impending Iraqi war, is the dissent, are the voices of dissent and the protests, is it really the same thing as all those anti-Americans who protested during Vietnam? Or is there something more to it? And if you are a veteran or a family member of a veteran, what do you think about our possible military action in 9/11? First, let's start the show. John Bassett's here. Bruce Arnold's here. We're going to talk a little bit about their experience in the armed services. Jess, what do you think? Should we start the show or what? Let's just start the show.
This is Jim Cassidy, commander of the American Legion, host 219, and charter member of the North Andover Taxpayers Association. I listen to Paying Attention with Tom Duggan on the new WCCM.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
To start, press any key. Where's the any key?
Welcome. You've got mail.
Do.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
All right, we're ready. John Bassett, our station manager here. And Bruce Arnold, one of our senior producers. He's not the senior producer. I think Jesse's actually got a few more years on him.
He's the program director.
He's the program. He's the is that what he is, the program director? Huh? What? What'd you please?
I empty baskets.
You run around and try and get dishes to people.
That's the thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very good. Yeah.
Jesse, pay attention.
Pay attention, Jesse.
I'm always paying attention.
Yeah, right. Did we actually have a show on Saturday on Jess?
Yes, you did.
Oh, we did have a show on Saturday. Yeah, right. Because I was actually worried about it. I was going to call from where I was,
yeah,
but
right.
I said, you know,
really
I'm on vacation. What do I care?
Right.
Let them worry about it. John Bassett's set job at this point. Let him deal with the heartache. If Cos is going to yell at anybody, it's going to be him.
Oh,
yeah. Six. I've got John Bassett here, and I've also got Bruce Arnold here, two guys. And I don't know, because a lot of veterans, most veterans that I know, are people who are very humble. They don't like to go around bragging about their service or right. what they lived through or how they feel about the country. They live it. They live it with who they are and what they are. And if you have any doubts about that, you can pick up today's page 7 of the Eagle Tribune and read our good friend Jim Cassidy, commander of the American Legion, post 219.
We had him on the show Friday.
Did you really have him
excellent.
On Friday?
He was excellent.
He's one of my favorite. I mean, he's a guy who really, he's a real American, truly is. And he wrote an exceptional column in today's paper, which I will read in its entirety before the end of the program. But first, I wanted to give Bruce and John an opportunity to maybe, and if at some point you don't want to talk about a question that I bring up, I know a lot of veterans are very touchy. My grandfather used to love to talk about his service in Corregidor. He used to talk about every detail that he could. That's how he was. So when I grew up, I always thought that's how all veterans were. Until one day, I'm not going to mention the name, but a good friend of the show who's a veteran, I asked him one day on the phone, would you like to come on for Memorial Day and talk about your service in World War II? And he got angry with me.
Mm-hmm.
because he said that those are my private thoughts, those are my private memories. And I had no idea that some veterans actually felt that way. So if at some point you guys don't want to talk about something, just say so and we'll move on. That's not a problem. Okay? So, how many people did you kill, Bruce? No. It's a
what a wise guy. You got it.
Right.
Well, that's...
But I had to give you, put a smile on your face somehow.
That's
huh?
a good question.
Right.
So, now, why don't you... Where were you stationed? What was your division? What was your mission, you know, primarily?
Well, I served in the military, in the Army, from 1956 to 1959.
Uh-huh.
And spent time at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, with public information. This 82nd Airborne Division, I was assigned to the 82nd Airborne, but I was not a jumper, as you say. Mm-hmm. I was with public information there. I spent a year on Aniwetok, which is in the Marshall Islands.
And now, Aniwetok.
It's 3,000 miles from Hawaii.
Right.
And that was the atomic test site for the atomic bomb. I spent 11 months and 28 days on that island. It's a piece of rock. It's a piece of coral in the middle of the ocean. During the Second World War, the Japanese manned that island, and the Americans took it over, and they used it as a refueling site for many of their ships. When I was there, it was a test site for the atomic bomb. I saw 7 shots.
Wow.
Of the
you look right at it?
Well, what you do is you don't look right at it. What happens is you are there, and it's a lagoon area. Your back is to the lagoon. And these atomic testing devices were not dropped from the sky. They were planted on different atolls throughout the lagoon area.
Atolls?
Atolls. That, again, is a piece of rock in the middle of the ocean. So they would call for a shot, and everyone on the island had to be accounted for. And if one person was not accounted for, the shot would be called off. It all depended on the weather also. If the weather were bad...
Mm-hmm.
They would call that off. Then they do a regular countdown. Your back was towards the lagoon. You were completely covered with rain gear, boots, and here you are in the tropics, about 110 degrees sometimes. But you were completely covered. And then they would do the countdown, and you would actually feel the rock tremble and so forth and so on. You had goggles on, you had glasses on, and when they said the all clear sign, you would turn around and you would look at it, you see the mushroom. You've all seen motion pictures of the mushroom.
Now, did you actually look at the mushroom cloud? Did you actually see it?
Of course you did, yes. Yeah. You couldn't do it while again, your back was to the lagoon.
Right.
Once the shot, you felt the heat on your back and so forth and so on. And in those days, it was almost like a game because you'd turn around and they go, yay, you saw the mushroom, you know, and looking back, it was... It shouldn't have been a game, you know. You felt bad. You were checked once a week. You had little badges on. They would check for any.
I'm sure nobody understood the magnitude of what was going on either. It was just a military exercise that was going on.
Yeah.
It could have been something that would have turned out irrelevant to the war, or it could have turned out to be what it was.
And a lot of guys who I served with there, both as civilians and in the military, are no longer with us because of radiation. And knock on wood, I don't glow in the dark, but. Then my final year in the military, I went to New York City and served at the Army Pictorial Center. In those days, it was the old Paramount Studios.
Right.
Motion Picture Studios. The Army took it over. And we did training films, a lot of training films that you see, and on different subjects. So I was fortunate enough to do what I'm doing here now in the military for 3 years. While on Aniwetok, I was in Armed Forces Radio and Television. It was my only job to broadcast on TV and also on radio. And I took the program, Take Trips.
Now, did you put out secret messages? I know that a lot of times during the war, they would have little things during the broadcast to let the troops know certain things. No,
not during my stay there. But when I came out, I was a civilian working for the Army Intelligence School at Fort Devens.
Wow.
That was secret work that we made training films.
So what'd you do?
And that I can't get into
now. Oh, come on. It's 50 years ago. Who's going to know?
No. That was
my audience won't tell
anybody.
That
was in the 70s. No, that was the Army Intelligence School. It was quite an experience as a civilian. But I missed the commercial life. That's why I came back, John, right?
Right.
I could have retired 5 years ago.
Could have been a full colonel, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I'd like to actually ask John Bassett a couple questions now, but because of John Bassett's tampering with my show and making me take commercials every 20 minutes.
That's right.
Right.
We're going to take a commercial.
You have to. He saw it all.
I know. I know. That's why I saved him for last.
That's it.
Those commercials pay the way, remember?
Absolutely.
We're going to take a get it.
Get rid of that. Put some patriotic music on. I don't want to hear that crap today. crying out loud, Jesse. What kind of patriot are you?
Leave, be nice.
Would you please? Yeah. Now, Bruce, when you were in the Army, I'm sure you heard a lot of swearing, right? Did you yell out in the middle of a battle? Or you went, you effing chap! Would you please?
Fortunately, I did not but see you.
No?
No.
Are we taking the break, Jesse, or what are you doing?
Yeah, at some point, Jesse, we'd like to go take a break and come back. I don't know if we can handle both at the same time, though. Let's give him a... That's called a CD player, Jess. You push the first button.
I have to switch from one CD to another.
I understand.
Okay.
All right. Very good.
There you go.
Now you're going to go from that. And then there's the clips on the... did I give it to you? Did I give you the other CD? All right. Okay. Very good. What's your place?
Does he know what he's doing?
Oh, was Ronnie Ford.
Hi, I'm Mike Pollock from Michael's Motors in Lawrence. How successful is advertising on WCCM? I've been bringing my message to everyone listening to WCCM Radio for over 18 years. That's how I've grown. WCCM works for me. It'll work for you. Try it soon.
Reap great benefits for your business or service. All it takes is a quick phone call to 978-683-7171, and a WCCM account manager will stop by to detail our services and explore the possibilities for your business.
The beauty of Blair House is not the only thing that adds to the splendor and happiness of this lovely setting. It is also the beauty and kindness of the people who provide the services. Blair House highly trained nurses and attendants know assisted living requires caring and attention to the people who are important, and that's the residents. Call Paul Andrelic, 2 Erlen Terrace, Tewksbury, 978-851-3121.
Hey, you guys are coming over for the game Sunday, right?
I don't know. Have you forgotten about the frozen pizza puff incident?
Yeah, but I've learned my lesson. This time, it's Tower Hill Variety.
Yeah, sandwiches.
But not just sandwiches. An entire playbook of luncheon meats. We'll get one of their famous cold cut platters.
He fakes for the provolone, but finds the pimento loaf wide open.
Don't forget their hot platters.
Pass the sausages down to the meatballs. Stuffed peppers. Touchdown!
Hey, Amos Alonzo Stagg, just call in the play, will you?
Hi. Tower Hill Variety, 101 Ames Street in Lawrence, 978-682-7222.
Knock it off.
The community development brush has painted a much nicer picture of the Methuen landscape, and so has Mata Auto Body. Renovating, painting, refurbishing, this building hasn't stopped expert mechanic, great auto body repair, and an array of beautiful automobiles from being at your beck and call. Car breaks down, they'll come and get you. You gotta go Mata, 42 Kirk Street, Methuen. See John Sr., that new doctor he's got really helping him. 978-683-6969. You gotta go Mata.
Home. When you were a kid, it was the last place you wanted to be. Some of us even packed our bags weekly to run away. Now all you really want to do is run home after a long day at work, especially when you've brought the rich, distinctive taste of Starbucks coffee home from your grocery store. So brew yourself a cup of one of Starbucks' deeply satisfying coffees and sit back knowing how good life can be once you've stopped running. Starbucks coffee at your grocery store.
Hon, time for bed.
I'm gonna take this first.
Robitussin DM? Wait, that's like setting the alarm for the middle of the night.
Huh?
It only lasts 4 hours. Your cough could wake us both up at 3 a.m. Sweetie, oh, here, take NyQuil cough. You'll get up to 8 hours of sleep. And a wife that still loves you in the morning.
That's a tough decision.
My gosh, you're funny.
NyQuil cough that stops your coughing so you can sleep through the night cough medicine. From the makers of NyQuil.
Our men and women in uniform deserve the best weapons, the best equipment, the best training, and they also deserve another pay raise.
This is the Paying Attention Radio Program.
Hi, this is Jimmy Carter, encouraging you to tune in to Paying Attention with my friend, Tom Duggan, every afternoon, right here on WCCM.
You know, I wonder, gentlemen, if with all the political correctness today, if we could actually, if American servicemen marching into Iraq today were actually be allowed to sing a song like this, with all the separation of church and state and all that baloney going on.
I don't think they'll be singing too many songs of any kind. No.
Well, I don't. You know, you would think not, but with all the devastation that went on in Germany and in the Philippines and, you know, hell, even Vietnam and some of the other conflicts that we've had since World War II, there always seems to be some kind of a songs, you know, a lot of hope and a lot of, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for. You're a World War II veteran. You can probably explain it better than I can.
Well, you mean that the war years produced certain types of songs?
Yeah.
Oh, well, sure. And they weren't all patriotic.
Not at all.
No.
You know, I mean, like, I'll Be Home for Christmas, I'll Be Seeing You.
A lot of sad songs, Jim.
Yeah, they were sad songs because they were sad times. Mm-hmm. You know, with over 13 million men and women under arms. Sure there were sad songs. These guys kept thinking about going home, and for a while it didn't look like it was ever going to end. The war in Europe, and then of course the war in Japan. If it wasn't for the A-bomb, and I still get furious with people who say, "Well, you know, it was the wrong thing for the United States to do to drop those bombs." Oh, sure. Do you think the Japanese wouldn't have used them on us if they had them first?
Yeah.
Or Hitler was very close to getting an A-bomb. And what people don't realize is that by dropping those two A-bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they shortened the war and saved God knows how many hundreds of thousands of American lives. Because the Japanese, I am convinced, the Japanese would have fought to the end on their home island. If they fought to the end on those crummy islands across the Pacific, one of which you were
and
on,
just
think what they would have done in their own homeland.
Bikini Atoll and Japan.
Right.
With the hundreds.
Iwo Jima.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
The whole thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
Now, John was in Europe. John was a medic. Come on, John.
Well, yeah, I was in the what we used to call the ETO, the European Theater of Operations. And it was purely the luck of the draw. I mean, I was drafted like millions of other guys, and purely the luck of the draw that I wound up in the medical corps and in an evacuation hospital, which is like a MASH unit today. We were about 5 or 6 miles behind the front lines, and we took the badly wounded. We had operating tables set up under. We were under tents. Actually, it was like a three ring circus. We had these huge tents, and we had one of our COs who was from Scituate, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. He was a lieutenant colonel. Howard Reed was his name. And he came up with the idea of lashing four of these huge tents together so that we had an operating room with six tables on one side and an operating room with six tables on the other. So we had 12 operating tables going nonstop, 24 hours a day. Everybody worked 12-hour shifts, and that's the amount of casualties that we handled during the war. And some of them were Germans, and you know, we treated them as we treated our own, that was just the way the United States operated. We abided by the Geneva Convention. Unfortunately, the Germans didn't always abide by the Geneva Convention. But it was a big experience for a kid who had no knowledge whatsoever of what war was like. I mean, we were all patriotic in those years. There were guys actually haunting the draft board, begging them to be drafted. But it was a different time, a totally different time, and. Tom Brokaw was right. It was the greatest generation, because actually, if it wasn't for that generation, who willingly gave up whatever they were doing in civilian life, whether they were school teachers, or whether they were dropouts, or whether they were firemen, policemen, name it, and had never had a gun in their hand, went into the service, whether it was the Marines, or the Army, or the Navy, or the Coast Guard, and they knew that... this was a fight to the end. It was either going to be the Germans or us. And if it was the Germans, Lord help us, And if it was the Japanese on the other side, Lord help us doubly. And so it was a fight to the end. And because of all those guys who willingly gave up their lives, we're able to sit here today, Tommy, and talk.
Now, did either one of you see any real combat as far, I mean, I know you were closer to the front lines, JB.
No.
But did either one of you actually have to, you know, take a gun and go into battle on the front lines?
First of all, unfortunately, no.
But by the Geneva Convention, medical personnel were not allowed to carry firearms.
Okay.
The administrative officers in the medical units were allowed to carry a revolver.
Pistol,
yeah. Period. But as far as actual frontline combat, no. Like you saw, they repeated the movie Saving Private Ryan Saturday night on network television. No. The closest I came to combat was on D-Day. I was part of the D-Day invasion, but not the first day. We were on an LST, landing ship tank, and we carried combat engineers from, I forget the port in England, and we were scheduled for H hour plus 8. H hour was 6 a.m. in the morning. Well, by the time 2 o'clock in the afternoon came around, they were hanging on by their fingernails on the beachheads, and we could not go in because it would have been too dangerous for us to go in with that size ship. An LST is a pretty good size ship. It's about 300 feet long. So we anchored outside of the beach area overnight and then went in the next morning. By that time, they had secured a toehold on the beach. They had moved off the beach, and they were moving inland.
Now, you said, I'm sorry, go ahead, Bruce.
You know, you hear all the stories, and I'm sitting here with Hoppy Curran, who served in Vietnam, and to Ronnie, who served overseas, as John did, and to Mr. Hendricks, Kenny Hendricks, too.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot imagine how it must be. Here you are in the jungle, like the jungle in Vietnam, and you're fighting. And same during the Second World War. Mm. You're talking about Private Ryan. Did you see Private Ryan?
I did see that movie.
You know, you can't put yourself there, what these men went through. I mean, you cannot imagine. You can't, no matter how much training you have.
And for the most part, these were relatively young kids.
Yes.
I mean, 17, 18, 19, who I'm sure had never even imagined what combat was going to be like. Yes, they had maneuvers, and yes, they had basic training, so-called. But the actual, I mean, when you saw some of these kids come in, you know, wounded, badly wounded, it got to you after a while. Just to see these young guys coming in with terrible battlefield wounds that you can't even imagine in your wildest imagination, but they did it, and a relatively untrained army of turned. And went up against probably at that time, the German army was probably the best trained army in the world at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, they were trained for war and nothing else. And these young kids came along from every village and town in the United States and went up against them and beat them.
You've talked to Commander Cassidy, and you're going to read the article.
Yeah, we'll try and call him later, too.
And we had him on the show the other day, and we chatted about, you know, the parades, and when I don't live in the past, but when we had parades, I mean, people went out to these parades. When flags would go by, you'd take your hat off. And I'm sorry, the attitude today, not only amongst the younger people, but the so-called mamas and papas of these younger people, you go to a function and you see their hat's still on, and when the flag goes by, you know, put your hand on your chest, take your hat off, be proud of it, and participate. And fortunately, there are people like Commander Cassidy who still keep it going. But on the other hand, they still need younger people to join organizations like this. And not young people are not joining those organizations.
No, they're not. And you know, and
they're dying off.
And the veterans are dying off. I mean, I forget. I read it somewhere where I don't know how many thousands of World War II veterans die every single week.
That's right.
I mean, and pretty soon. They're not going to be just like World War One.
Yeah.
How many World War One veterans are around? Very few.
Many.
The same thing you're going to say about World War Two and Korea, and before
Vietnam.
You know it, they're going to say it about Vietnam.
Yeah.
You know, so
right.
Now, let me ask you guys, you know, without getting into the politics of it, but, you know, you guys are both veterans. You know what it's like from the front lines end. I mean, you walk into any company, everybody knows who runs the show. It's the secretaries.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's when you're looking at the country, you know that the people who really understand what's going on are those people who are on the front lines and really made the sacrifice. What do you guys think, honestly, about the prospects of the United States sending men into Iraq, sending men into Afghanistan, where we are right now? There's talk that we may have a foothold in the Philippines because there are terrorist cells there, hot spots in Africa and Sudan. What do you guys think? Is this, to you, do you see this as large of a threat as Hitler was to the globe, whereas back then Hitler didn't have the bomb, he didn't have the nuclear weapons? Some of these wackos, who truly are out of their minds, have the capabilities or are close to having capabilities of blowing this world up.
Well, that's
what do you guys
told.
Think about all that?
That's what we're told. But right. I don't know that personally, but I mean, we're told that from you know, the reports that we get.
Yeah, Tommy mentioned Hitler. I think the basic difference, Tommy, is that with Hitler and with the Japanese, you had a nation that you were fighting. You knew who they were.
Mm-hmm.
You knew what they stood for. They had an army. They had an air force. They had
that's
a
right.
navy. These terrorists,
you don't know
who
they
are they?
Yeah.
You know, they're all over the world, obviously.
Yeah.
And how can you...
You can't compare. There's no comparison.
How can you fight these people other than what we're trying to do in Afghanistan?
Yeah.
I mean, we knocked out the Taliban, but Al-Qaeda is all over the world.
Yeah.
And one of these days, you know, somebody's going to get a hold of one of those dirty bombs.
Yeah.
Or in fact, last night on... I forget the newscast I was watching. I think it was NBC. The Washington Post came out with a story today showing in the Republic of Georgia, in the former Soviet Union, where they have stored all these nuclear weapons.
Amazing.
And that they were trying to destroy, but there's still stuff showing up. And more frighteningly, there's stuff that they can't account for.
Right.
So, you know, who's got it? Is it one of these wackos? Well, it could very well
sure.
be. And how do you fight against people like that who could come in on trains, who could come in on container ships coming into the various harbors across the United States? This is very, very difficult. Very difficult. I think it's much more difficult than fighting Hitler or Hirohito.
Yeah.
You know.
Bad times.
Bad times.
What we have to do, and I'm not going to speak for you guys. You can obviously kick in with your own ideas, but I think what we have to do is, I mean, as much as we hate to have to do it in a free society, we've got to close our borders.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to say that we're only going to allow a select group of people into the country after they've been screened, after we know who they are, after we've done background checks on them. They're only going to come from certain countries that aren't hostile to the United States. And then if that country becomes hostile to the United States, we stop letting people in from there. You know, everybody out of the pool if you can't behave. What do you guys think?
It's going to be take a lot of time.
That itself is very difficult to do. But
look at the Haiti situation.
You don't have to look any further than Boston Harbor.
Yeah.
Ever seen some of those container ships coming through Boston Harbor on their way to Chelsea and so forth? I mean, who knows what's on those things?
Mm-hmm.
They don't check them. That's all it would take would be for one of those container ships carrying a nuclear device. Yeah. I mean, and the rest, you know, you can just imagine. So that's why it's such a tremendously difficult task. And frankly, I wonder if we're up to that kind of a protracted struggle. I mean, it was different during World War II and Korea and Vietnam, especially World War II. Even though it was 4 years, we were in it for 4 years, and sometimes it seemed like an eternity.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that there was going to be an end to it, and that. You know, by the time 1943 rolled around, 1944, you knew that it was only a question of time before we were going to march to Berlin. And when they dropped the A-bomb, you knew that it was only a question of a very short period of time before the war was going to be over. So there was closure to it. Here, there's no closure.
I don't think you'll ever see the A-bomb used again. I don't think the United States will use it.
No, I don't think the United States will. But
again, like you say, there's a possibility of other countries doing it to us.
How did you guys adjust? When you came home now, the war's over, you've both been discharged, you come back to your family, everybody, obviously you're happy, you're related, your family's happy to see you. How do you adjust now? How do you go from being in a situation where your reality every single day is life and death, where you've got people dying all around you, where you've got, you know, it's kill or be killed. You know, you're obviously you're in a different situation, Bruce. Where,
that was,
you know,
different. Yeah.
You're testing, but you know, yep, you're testing things that are going to be used in the war to help save the war. So you're living, eating, breathing, and sleeping this war. And now it's over, and you come back to what you would, I guess, consider normal, quote unquote, normal life. How do you adjust to that? How do the people around you adjust to that?
Well, again, fortunately, I did not serve during the combat years myself during that time, and I think I adjusted to it pretty good. But back in my mind, once I left the Aniwetok and came back to serve in New York City, which was great duty, by the way, but it's still in my mind today, the things that I did see, the testing site. I can see. We've all seen pictures. You've all seen movies of the mushroom. But when you're there, yeah, and you say to yourself, my God, what destruction. The other thing we would do, too, is we would visit by small airplane some of the other atolls. They would put buildings on these little atolls. And the destruction that these bombs, this bomb would do, I mean, just rip buildings. And again, you've seen pictures of that.
Sure. Yeah.
But to swoop down and see the destruction, it's just, it's, makes you stop and think. It, you know, who said it? I hope I never have to see it again in real life, really.
Right, exactly.
And again, John, on the other hand, you know, John was there during the Second World War.
Well, you know, but it was different when, you know, first of all, a country never demobilized quicker than the United States did. But when you figure it, by the time the war in Japan ended, there were still roughly 12 to 13 million men and women under arms.
Yeah.
Well, man, we went from zip, from 13 million down to, and the difference was that all of the veterans who returned home at various times from Europe and from the Pacific were welcomed home as heroes.
That's right.
Like, I mean, first of all, the government couldn't do enough. The GI Bill of Rights, which gave any guy who wanted to go to college could have gone
build
to college.
Build a home.
Right.
Build
a
home.
They came up with all these new constructions of these homes. Levittown in New York was a perfect example. You could get GI loans, and the whole country was devoted to rebuilding the economy from a wartime economy to a peacetime economy. And it was a feeling that everybody, they took off the uniforms, put their civilian clothes on again, and went back to work.
Right.
And that's what it was.
And on the other hand, the poor the people who served during the Korean War and Vietnam War, they really weren't.
No, they weren't.
Weren't recognized.
No, mm-hmm. No. It took
today
a long time.
They're being recognized.
Do you think do you think we've made up as a country for the lack of respect that we as a nation, not everybody, obviously there are people like you and I, maybe your families, who did appreciate the Vietnam veterans, Korean. But do you think that as a whole, as a country, do you think America's made up for what we didn't do for the Vietnam and the Korean War vets when they came back? Or do you still think we can never obviously repay them for what they've done, but as far as the way we treated them when they come back?
I thought it was, in my opinion, I didn't think they were treated very, you know, not in a good way. They weren't treated in a good way at all when they came
back.
And I look at the wall. I've never visited the wall in Washington.
No.
I have visited the traveling wall when it was at Northern Essex and also at Manning Bowl in Lynn. And I'll tell you, have you ever seen the wall? The traveling wall?
No.
John, you just stand there and you look at these names. In fact, they just did it this past week. There was over 50,000 members on that wall, and they did it. They read all the names off. They had special ceremonies.
Exactly.
There. But you sit there and you can't imagine. I mean,
I think the country has tried to make amends for the way the way the Vietnam veterans were treated. Whether in the eyes of some of those veterans it'll ever be enough, who knows? But at least they have made a sincere attempt. And as far as Korea is concerned, that was always referred to as the Forgotten War.
The Forgotten War, it's true.
You know, it happened so soon after World War II, 5 years after World War II ended. All of a sudden, here we were again
in
a so-called police action in Korea. And I don't think as much attention was given to the Korean veterans as was to the World War II veterans. And I don't think a serious attempt was made to make up for the Korean situation, as was with the Vietnam veterans.
Talking to Hoppy Curran today and Hendricks and Ronnie, you know, we can't forget the people who are still in hospitals, who've been in hospitals, mm-hmm. nursing homes and in veterans, mm-hmm. some of them 40, 50 years, they're forgotten.
Yeah.
And that's sad. I know a lot of veterans organizations, they do visit.
Mm-hmm.
They do visit them, but stop and think.
And how about the veterans who came back with all of their, you know, physically okay,
but mentally or emotionally will never be the same.
Well, look at the these are most of the people in the hospital.
Right.
You know, it's sad.
Absolutely. When we come back, I just want to ask real quick before the end of the hour, and I appreciate the time both of you have given us because I think it's important. But I do want to ask you what you guys think about the possibility of guys still being over in Vietnam. I know that the guys like you have your finger on the pulse of you know what you think is really going on. Yeah. So we'll come back after this. Jesse, we'll take it to a commercial, and we'll be back after this with John Bashett, station manager, and Bruce Arnold, our head senior producer guy thing.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... We'll hear all of us soon.
This is the Paying Attention Radio Program.
The City of Lawrence wants to help you keep your home safe from lead paint hazards that cause serious health problems and learning disabilities among young children. Low and moderate income property owners or owners who rent to low income families are eligible for loans, grants, and technical assistance to remove lead paint. For an application or more information, please contact the City of Lawrence Housing Program staff at 978-794-5891. That's 978-794-5891.
What did Dan Summers say when all his color copiers were connected for a last-minute sales pitch that won?
Yes! Icon! I-K-O-N! Icon! Yeah!
And when Gloria Miller got 1,500 copies of a bound manual printed in 10 different cities at once, how did she react?
Yes! Icon! Woohoo!
And here's an in-house copy center that's so efficient, it got a tough CFO like Jeff Green to remark,
Yes! Icon! Yee-hee!
Icon is the world's only full-service provider for communicating any kind of business information, from copiers and printers to outsourcing, e-services, color, and more. To find out what Icon can do for you, call 1-888-ASK-ICON. That's 1-888-ASK-IKON. Or visit us online at icon.com. Icon, the way business gets communicated.
Yes! Icon!
Hey, Nick, everyone's listening to our financial planning show, The Bottom Line.
That's right, Tom. We're heard on Thursdays at 4 p.m. for a full hour.
That's when we talk to the brightest listeners in the Valley about retirement planning, estate planning, investment planning, wills, trusts, education planning, and more.
We'll answer your questions, and we'll have Reed Smith to start us off with a market update.
We give the no-nonsense information you need and have some fun, too.
So join us at 4 every Thursday afternoon. I'm Nick Forgione.
And I'm Tom Licciardello. We've got the answers you want to know. Hey, Mr.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
This is the Paying Attention Radio Program.
Yeah, hello, this is Robert Clary. I'm the author of From the Holocaust to Hogan's Heroes on Madison Book. And you're listening to Paying Attention on WCCM.
I mean, the only thing we have to hold against him is he's a Frenchman. Now, you guys must have the same kind of animosity toward France that I do. I mean, you guys lived it. I only read about it in history books.
Oh, I like the French girls. Hey.
The French?
French girls.
What the hell's wrong with these people? They wouldn't even have a country if it wasn't for us. They've been giving us a hard time ever since.
That's the French. They were that way.
We're supposed to just like, it's like one of those, I guess it's like a friend that you just go, oh, well, that's Jimmy. You know, what are you going to do?
Tommy,
that's just him.
Well, that's Tommy.
Exactly.
You remember the Vichy French?
Yeah.
You know, they made alliances with the Germans. Right. That's the way they are. But they, you know, there was the French Resistance also.
French Resistance.
French Resistance. Very good. They were sharp. But, I mean, that's every nation is different. So what are you going to do?
Now, do you guys think, and I know it's kind of off topic, but I think it's something that it's always in the consciousness of guys who have been to Vietnam, and I know you guys went in Vietnam, but I'm sure you also have a good a good handle on the feeling of other veterans when you talk to them. Yeah. And you, do you think that there are still men over in Vietnam?
Over there?
There's always talk about guys that were, maybe they were taken, maybe they were brainwashed, maybe they went AWOL and then they, you know, blended into the population. But do you think that there are still Americans over there that that maybe should have come home, that didn't come home because of Henry Kissinger and Nixon and you know, all the treaties?
I don't think so. I think there may be a few still over there against their will. There's always a chance of that as prisoners.
POWs,
we don't
really
know that, but I kind of think so. But someone who was over there because they want to be there, I don't think so.
Well, I was just thinking of all the different possibilities. Some people maybe because they didn't want to, and there were some. You get deserters in every war, you know, that take off.
Yeah.
Well,
so I'm just trying to think of if you think whether or not they're, because I tend to think that just by law of averages, having so many men over there in that
you
war,
think some over there,
that, they, that, they, that there's got to be some. You know, I mean, how many, even like, what was it, 10 or 20 years ago that they were finding Japanese guys in caves?
Japanese still live,
oh, sure,
right?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
they still think World War II is going on. Right. So, I mean, what's to say that that's not really happening in the jungle somewhere in Vietnam?
Well, was that movie,
Apocalypse Now?
Apocalypse
Now?
Thank you very much, I can't even say it.
That was a great movie.
Apocalypse
Now.
You're talking about a scary movie.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's, that was where they pointed some of that out, I think, in that movie.
That's right.
I don't know, John.
I don't know either. That's a tough one to answer. But the main thing on everybody's mind these days is Saddam Hussein.
What's going to happen?
And Iraq.
Yeah.
And you know, he, in my opinion, he'll do his usual Dodger Mac.
Right.
And, you know, he'll allow the, I think he'll allow the inspectors
in. Oh, yes,
in,
he will.
But what are they going to, I don't think.
He'll hide a lot of stuff,
you know,
too.
He'll hide a lot of stuff.
What are they going to do?
And eventually, I think that, you know, we'll have to go in there.
By January, February.
You know, one of the things that really irritates me about this, you know, America's, it's always America's fault crowd. You know, guys know who I'm talking about. And not in person in particular, but the types of people I'm talking about. Is that, you know, they want to equate us, the United States, with Iraq. Like, oh, we've got nuclear weapons too. Right, but we've got a stable government.
Uh-huh.
That's set up in such a way so that we're not just willy-nilly going out and wiping countries out and dropping bombs in them because we feel like it. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a place like Iraq, you got one guy making all the decisions, no checks and balances. What he says goes, and he's even gassed his own people.
I'm sure.
And I think that those things need to be kept in mind. I think there's a lot of people today who are living their daily life who aren't really paying as much attention to this stuff as they probably should be.
Yeah.
Who go with, you know, whatever Jay Leno says after, you know, on the Tonight Show with his little quips or whatever Conan O'Brien says or whatever they hear on some comedian gets up and makes a disparaging remark about George Bush or whatever, that they don't really understand it. I think we ought to be out there educating people.
There's no question about that. And you say if they get rid of this guy, right?
Right.
What's his name again? Hussein? Who?
Saddam Hussein.
Then there's someone
is
else.
That his middle name? Who?
Whatever.
Who-hoo.
There's someone else.
Saddam Hussein.
There's someone else that's behind, you know, with him too. I mean.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole cadre there of people.
You get rid of one guy and there's another
the
one in his place. Look at the hatred that you see on television every night against the Americans.
Right. Well, you see it here in this country.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
I mean, you see people in this country protesting against everything that we do as if everything's our fault.
Mm.
You know, the World Trade Center was our fault and Vietnam's our fault. Everything's our fault because 500 years ago, Indians died or something.
Please.
You know,
please.
It's, I mean, the wackiness of their logic. And it always bothers me when someone calls and makes that kind of a discussion. I know we're going to go, Jess, but, and you're producing Hotline because I know you're a veteran.
Yeah.
And I know that you're too polite of a guy to say something to some of these guys that call in and say, hey, look, wait a minute, I was there. But I know that you feel it. I know that you feel it.
You do.
And I know that John Bassett feels it, and I know that every American out there like Mr. Cassidy feels it.
Right.
And so I wish that...
Read that.
I'm going to read it on
that's
the...
Excellent.
But I wish that some of these people, look, they can have their own political opinion and view.
Of course they
but
can.
Be a little bit more sensitive. Okay. You want everyone else to be sensitive to your views, be sensitive to theirs,
right.
too.
And have an
we can have
mind.
Freedom in America, but we also need to have self-controls. Right, gentlemen?
Open
back
mind.
After this.
Right. Got it.
This is your source for news. WCCM Radio 1490, Haverhill Lawrence, the flagship station of Costa Eagle Broadcasting. And now serving Greater Lawrence, Greater Lowell, Greater Haverhill, and the rest of the Merrimack Valley with the news you need to know. The WCCM 1490 news team is on the air.
I'm Ron Hurst, News Team 1490. An investigation.